This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you been struggling lately? Maybe you're having trouble sleeping, difficulty with a relationship, or just suffering from low self-esteem. If so, then BetterHelp wants to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and to help you. You get to talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network, and they give you access to help that may not be available in your area. You just need to fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And there's a special offer to Nowhere to Be Found listeners. You'll get 10% off of your first month, but only if you go through the link or type in betterhelp.com/NTBF for Nowhere to Be Found. That's better, HELP.com/NTBF. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. And you can find the link in our show notes and on our website, nowheretobefoundpodcast.com.
I'm your host, Amanda Papineau, and this is Nowhere to Be Found.
Everyone in Ryan's family has had a role since he went missing. Ryan's dad, Scott's role, has been the unrelenting searcher. He hasn't done many interviews, but he's been a pillar of support to Heather and the girls, all while keeping his boots on the ground looking for his son. I'm so glad he agreed to speak with me so we could hear things from his side of the situation.
My name is Scott Stuka. I am Ryan's father.
And we kind of talked about, you know, I've talked with Heather now, I've talked with Jordan, and just kind of got the rundown of what you guys have been going through in the last 3.5 years, which is a lot. But I'm curious because everybody kind of has a different role, it seems like, in your family. You know, Heather's mm-hmm. Heather's been kind of the public spokesperson, if you will. Like, she
She's our spark plug, for sure. Yeah,
exactly. Absolutely. And then, you know, Jordan said she was right in the midst of trying to graduate high school and mm-hmm. keep her life somewhat normal, and you guys trying to keep her life somewhat normal, mm-hmm. and Juliana as well. So she mm-hmm. kind of played the support role from home. What do you feel like your role has kind of been?
I'm, you know, trying to stay positive and to, you know, keep Ryan's story alive, you know, behind the scenes stuff, as far as putting up posters and banners and, all through British Columbia, Canada, and doing all that stuff to try to, you know, the stuff that I can do is just getting out there and being an advocate for Ryan, and not only Ryan, but just other missing people and helping out where we can.
Yeah. And Jordan said too that, you know, there wasn't really a day when she went out to Sun Peaks that you weren't boots on the ground. Like, you've been kind of mm-hmm. the guy who's out there.
You could call me the bull in the china shop. I was out there absolutely every day from dawn till dusk. And we covered a lot of terrain. In the beginning, it was, you know, it was probably not very organized at all.
Yeah.
Obviously you have your own devices, but then you learn as you go. And after living on that mountain for almost 4.5 months, you learn a lot.
And, oh, I bet.
Like I said, Heather and myself make a great team, because she had an injury and she couldn't get out there, but she did all the rest of the stuff with the social media and being that face. She was the face, right, and the voice and the writing and everything. And I was out there just trying to get some sort of some closure, trying to find something that we could go with.
Absolutely. And just to cross things off the list too, you know, even if on the days, obviously it's hard to come back empty handed day after day, mm-hmm. but you know, like Jordan and I were saying, at least you are able to say, okay, I checked here. I thoroughly mm-hmm. believe that I could cross this off a list, or maybe not, like, oh, you know, this area is so dense. I feel like we should swing back. And so when you first got up there, I mean, I know it was probably just utter chaos for many weeks, but how did you even begin that? Like, how did you try to start saying, okay, here's where we're going to search? Like, did you map it out, or what was the game plan?
I looked at how the search and rescue team conducted their work there, and kind of we looked at the map of that area and said, okay, here's where he was last seen, and here's where his house is, and we kind of gridded it out off of that and worked our way from that point. And as the snow melted, we, you know, spread out further and further. But the area between the house that Ryan was at last seen and his house was very close. You could throw a rock across this valley, but there was 6 feet of snow at that time, 6-7 feet of snow. You couldn't get across there.
Yeah.
But I always had the volunteers come. And probably about 2 months into the search, people would come by, and new people, return people. And I always said, okay, guys, what I want you to do is to go to that house where Ryan was last seen and just imagine to yourself what scenario could have happened or might have happened if he walked and went in a direction. And then I want you to go in between the houses, and then here's where he was living, and put yourself in his shoes. And that's what I wanted them to do first. And if it takes you all day, and then you can come back, and then we'll put you in a group with some team leaders. And it was like almost like running I don't know if that's the right analogy, but a business where you had to organize people in a certain way. But I wanted them to touch and feel what we were going through, and it gave them a sense of what we've gone through and what we will be going through. And I think it gave everybody an eye opening, you know, it was eye opening for everybody. And they basically came back and they just go, oh my God, like how is this possible? Nobody could understand that.
Right. That's exactly what I want to do is, right. You know, go down, and especially, you know, in the snow, I think would be ideal, just because I don't know what that feels like. 6-7 feet of snow is like something that I only see. I mean, I've been snowboarding when I go to the resort, mm-hmm. not, mm-hmm. you know, in Oregon or even here yeah. in California. But as far as yeah. just walking through it on a regular basis, or like, you know, when you go to a restaurant, yeah. you're walking through, I just have never had to experience that. So,
yeah.
And a lot of people yeah. haven't.
Everybody so I think it's friends that are from our town would come up and they'd be like, oh, Scott and Heather, I can't believe the absolute sheer amount of snow. And they didn't know that this town existed, and it's in our own backyard. Well, it's like 9.5 hours away, but they didn't understand how this place was there, and it had so much snow, and it was just, you know, it was out in the wilderness. There's one way up to that mountain and one way out, one road. That's it. So you can't just branch off and go places.
That's right. There's nowhere to go.
There's nowhere to go.
That's so interesting. So it just really, it just really makes me wonder, like, if there's not that many options, where could he have gone? It's kind of mind-boggling, I'm sure, for you as well.
Absolutely.
So what did you guys do about the snow? I mean, was there somebody plowing the snow in certain areas for you so you could search? Or how do you search a snowbank 7 feet deep?
So I was using some of the local people up there at the beginning and asking them if they could move some snow for me. They had big equipment and loaders and whatnot, and I have an extensive construction background. So, I contacted some people in our hometown in Edmonton and to see uh-huh. if I could get some equipment up there. And cause I don't like to sponge off people, and I just wanted to do this on my own. So I ended up getting a piece of equipment up there after, I think it was about the third or fourth week in kind of mid-March. And I, most every day, when I wasn't searching on foot, I ran equipment with a really good friend of mine, and we cleaned up after ourselves so that we didn't disturb the community. And we went through every snowbank we could find with that equipment. And, I didn't want to wait for the snow to melt. So every scoop, every bucket, my friend and I, we'd have a plan every day. We, it's like working in a construction site, you have a safety plan, obviously, and you have a plan of, okay, what if we find something?
Right. What
if this is the day, right? So we were always on the lookout. There was always two of us. And we would, I want to say probably put, we put a lot of hours on that equipment. So we ran it every day just about until the snow melted. Cause I was just like, we're here right now. And there's a 10 foot snow pile there that was pushed up by the equipment that does the snow removal up there.
Right.
I don't want to wait and see whether he's in that pile. Wait until July. Because there's so much snow there, and it's you're in the Canadian Rockies, so it doesn't get warm at night, so it takes a long time to melt. So we ran equipment and moved that snow.
That's amazing.
Didn't find anything. We were looking for a shoe, a hat, all the stuff that we have on our posters that shows what we were up against, and that's what we were looking for.
Yeah. Man, that sounds really mentally taxing too, because you, like you said, you have to be prepared every day for if you do find something, and it's kind of a, you want answers, but it's.
And then when the resort closed, when the last day of skiing ended, it was probably, I think it was April 15th. I went to the town or the ski resort and asked if I could go up some of the ski outs. Like where people would ski down was hard packed from all the cat equipment.
Uh-huh. And,
they said, sure, but we're obviously the liability is mine. I said, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. So we went from one end of town to the other on the ski outs with that equipment and dug in all those locations as well that we felt needed to be looked at.
Wow. Well, you certainly can't say that, you didn't put the maximum effort and then some into searching that area, mm-hmm. then like you really did search every square inch mm-hmm. you could, which I don't really know what more you could ask for. So once the snow melted, did that kind of change, that had to change your tactic? How long did you took off work, obviously, to do all of this, to be up there every day? Mm-hmm. How mm-hmm. long were you off of work for that?
To begin, well, we obviously thought that this was not going to be a long process. We were going to go up there and within that first day or two, it was going to be, okay, we're going to go home, collect our stuff and that'll be it. And
right.
collect Ryan.
Right.
And, after a month goes by, you're going, oh my God, like this is, I don't know if I use this analogy that it felt like if you've seen that movie Groundhog Day. You wake up every day and it's the same thing every day. You're reminded of it every day. And it just, you still live it now. Right.
Yeah.
So, the company I work for, I'm really fortunate to work with a great company, and they helped us out along the way. And I ended up, after 2 months, went on short-term disability.
Wow.
So that part, and then I, that lasts for, into the summer and into the fall. And then I got off of that and went back to work. And that was probably the hardest thing I ever did. But I've got a friend up in Kamloops that said, what would Ryan want you to do? He would want you to go back to work. You gotta get going and do your thing. And he's right. He was right.
Yeah, absolutely. Because Ryan worked with you for a while, right? He was
absolutely yes. He worked. Yeah. He was part of the team.
How was that?
He loved it. At the beginning, it was hard for him. He woke up every day and came in to work with me every day, and he, you know, he learned a lot the first little bit and understood a few things because he, you know, obviously I bring that stuff home and I do stuff at home and he learns from me there. But to be, you know, here you go, here's a mentor, another carpenter to help you out, and away you go, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't this career path that he was longing for, but this was summers at first. And then after that, he went to, he took a year off before, right after high school and graduated, and he did quite well in school. So he was really smart. And then he went to work with me for a year. By the end of that year, I think he was just like, I'm not sure I want this. So he ended up going doing a year college. And then after that, I think he took a little bit of time off again and wasn't quite sure the career path he wanted. And then came back to work with me again for about, I think it was 6 months. We were slow at the time. I couldn't bring him back until we got busy again. And then that was the timeline where, you know, he came up to Heather and myself, and I think it was around his birthday of 2017. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I want to go and do this. And we said, perfect. Good. That's a great experience. And we wish we could have done that when we were your age.
Yeah,
and
me too.
So he, yeah, absolutely. So he ended up, you know, doing that and setting himself up in the fall, and worked with you know, our organization till the end of November, a couple of weeks before the end. And he took some time off, and then in December 1, away he went.
Right. Yeah, that's tough. You know, the transition and trying to figure out where you're at in your life at that time is, you know, it's kind of a whirlwind. But I love that he, you know, just, he wanted to have that experience, you know, go up with some buddies. It sounds like a great time. I would love to do that. You know, go, I don't know anyone who wouldn't, but, and it's so beautiful up there, and it's just something different, you know, especially since, you know, Absolutely. He was working kind of the 9 to 5 and getting the responsibility, taste of responsibility that comes with adulthood, to be able to mm-hmm. take that time and say, oh, you know, hey, it would be so fun to go up and snowboard every day with my friends. And, you know, that sounds like a blast.
I remember about a week before that the date, February 17th, I texted him. I said, how are things going? He's like, Dad, I've snowboarded like 36 days straight. Jeez. Just loved it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's just having a blast. Yeah. Yeah. So he was having a really good time.
So Heather said that you actually would talk to Ryan on the phone a little bit more than she did, even. Like, she would text him. But,
yes, I did.
So what kind of, I mean, just chit-chat kind of stuff? Or what kind of, like, what
were those like? Just to see how he was doing. And obviously, sometimes he wouldn't return my call right away. But I always tried to call him very regularly. And, you know, Christmas came around. And during that year, and Heather working for the airline business, she had the opportunities, he could have came home numerous times, and we begged him, pleaded, hey, you know, come on home. We're going to, even if it's for a day, we'd love to see you. And he's like, no, I'm having lots of fun here, and I've got lots of friends, and he was just having a really good time.
Yeah.
So we just said, oh, okay, well, continue on, and we have your Christmas gifts here. And, you know, kept bugging us. He wanted us to come, but quite honestly, his dog Oscar was his world before he left. And he really wanted us to bring the dog up.
Really?
Kind of always say he didn't really give a crap whether we came to see him. He wanted his dog there. He wanted his dog.
Oh, that's funny. I've not heard that.
Yeah. He just loved that dog.
Okay.
And if you look on his Instagram, the very last post that he put on his Instagram was his dog.
What kind of dog is he?
I know how much he missed him.
Aww.
You know what? He's like kind of a Heinz 57.
Oh, okay.
He looks like a miniature, I don't know, like it's hard to say, like a Burmese mountain dog, miniature Burmese mountain dog.
Wow.
But he's just little legs on him. But he's just, when he was a puppy, because he had this big paws, and Ryan took him everywhere with him. That dog went everywhere with him. And he kind of, we always teased and said, oh, he's going to be huge because of his paws. But he never did get that big. And he's just, I used to send him texts with pictures of the dog saying, like, because Oscar always he always sits at the front on our, in our bonus room, looking out the window. He kind of perches himself up over the sofa and looks outside. And I say, "Hey, Ryan, Oscar's waiting for you to get home." And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, I can see that. I miss him too," and all that other stuff.
So, that's cute. And yeah, so you guys don't go up. You know, he's not able to come home because he's having such a good time. I mean, I guess that's a good thing, really. But.
Yeah, and then and his work schedule didn't work out so that he could come home. You know, it's but obviously he had some limited timing and everything, and he wanted to maximize what he was, you know, his fun time there. And
yeah, right.
That's what he did.
So, yeah. As far as you know, were there any girls in Ryan's life? Was he dating anybody at that time?
No, I didn't really hear anything about that, but you know, I don't doubt that there could have been a girl or two. You know, rumors go around that, oh yeah, he hooked up with a couple of girls there, but you know, that's rumors.
Yeah.
But,
nothing that he was bringing home to mom and dad.
No, nothing he would mention, okay. Kind of thing. But I mean, he's 20 years old, going to be 21 soon. So he had to, you know, some of that stuff you don't hear about, right?
Right. So the friends that he has. So I know you guys knew, Heather calls him Jimmy James, or I guess you call him Jimmy James. Yep.
Yeah, that's what it started out. Yeah.
Is that the only friend you really knew of up there with him?
Yes, at the time.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. He went up there and both of them were super excited to go, and they found this place, this little house that they shared with 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, maybe 7 other people.
Jeez.
It was really, really crammed. And there was, they were in a room that was about 10 feet by 6 feet. It was
tiny. Oh my God.
Barely fit. They had a bunk bed.
Oh, him and James were sharing a room?
Yes, they were in a room with a bunk bed. And Brian brought his big 40-inch TV so they could game and stuff. And they were... It was good enough for them.
Wow. That's like almost worse than dorm style.
Absolutely.
Space-wise, I didn't know that. I thought he had his own room.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
So now, you know, did you kind of get to know his friends up there after the fact?
Yeah. When we showed up, we met all of his roommates and celebrated his birthday with them and all the rest of you know, that we were up there and invited him over for dinners and stuff. We had rented a house that was quite big and we had to live, you know, we had groups of people showing up that, God bless them that, you know, came out and helped us, you know, do our searching. And they stayed with us in this big house that we were, given a really good rate on.
Wow.
by some people that, like I said, Heather and I always say we had these guardian angels that, you know, helped us along the way. And you can't even put a number to the amount of people that were, there's a definite silver lining with all these people that helped us out, and we can't thank them enough. It's just,
of course, that's amazing. And that's something that I keep, you know, with these different families that I've talked to now, it seems to be a reoccurring theme that the community is basically the backbone of how these searches and all this stuff end up coming to life is, you know, everybody just pulls together, and it's such a insane situation. And especially anybody else who's a parent will obviously feel this deep connection, like, oh my gosh, you know, we need to help them as much as we can. And so it's so good to hear that it's kind of it doesn't matter where you are in the country or in the world, even, you know, you guys are international for us. It's the same. There's this sense of community and longing to help when a family is in their darkest moments. And that's like one of the only silver linings really of any of these situations that I can see is the relationships that you guys gained. And you know, Heather and I spoke about it a little bit, is it's hard that it had to come at the cost of, not being able to find Ryan and going through all of this, but she has, you know, all these wonderful relationships.
And we talk to people regularly, and we know, and they've said it before that, you know, if this wasn't if this wasn't a tragedy that Ryan, you know, if Ryan was still here and they hadn't been part of this, that they would give it back in a heartbeat, right?
Of course. So
that's pretty, pretty powerful.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I try to remind people and kind of, you know, feeding off of that, it's really easy for people listening to a podcast to get wrapped up in the case, you know, and it's just a mystery type of thing like Jordan and I talked about. And that's kind of the other side of the card of that is, you know, oh, they think that they can solve the case and it's a, you know, they'll come to you with suggestions and, you know, I'm sure some of them are welcome and some of them are kind of out there, but everybody kind of ends up trying to play detective a little bit. Did mm-hmm. you feel like that at some point? Like, were you trying to, I mean, I know you were searching on the ground, but were you trying to piece this together?
When you're out there in 6 feet of snow and trying to figure out where and what direction, it's, you know, you can think outside the box and all the theories and the conspiracy theories and all the rest of the other things that are out there. I've thought of them.
Oh, I've
thought of every one of them.
Sure.
And we stick to the facts and, you know, it can take you down a real dark hole if you really wanted to, but you know, I'm really lucky that I have Heather to ground me along this journey. And, you can go down a dark hole. I'm not going to say I didn't or did go down one, but it's not good for you emotionally. And, we've got to keep remembering that we have two beautiful daughters that need us at home. So the conspiracies and all the rest of the stuff, you know, we always try to keep to the facts. And the fact of the matter is the constant thing here is that Ryan's missing and we have no evidence of anything other than that he was in a certain area at a certain time on February 17th, 2018.
Right.
And from there, you can travel all over British Columbia. You could throw a dart at the map of British Columbia and go, well, let's go start and look over there. And right now we're just not prepared to do that.
Right.
Until some hard evidence comes to light.
Leads you away from the hill, because right now there's nothing leading you away from it.
Right.
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 I think that makes perfect sense. I mean, there, like you said, you could get lost in the theories of what ifs and throw yourself behind everyone, but what good would it really do you in the end if all you have is speculation? And I think that's kind of what sets you guys apart, is that you've been able to, not saying that you know, like you said, you haven't thought of all of them, because of course you have, but mm-hmm. not entertaining them in a way that's affecting other people is something different. Mm-hmm. And quite inspiring as well, because that's difficult to do, I would imagine.
It is absolutely difficult. And if this journey has taught me one thing, it's that we'll always have family and people that love us. And you know, the love that we get from other people is what keeps us going, and that's the biggest part of this. And you can think about it any other way, but it's powerful stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just try to feed off of that and continue what we're doing with the social media and the keeping his story alive.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What about law enforcement? How's your relationship been with them throughout this entire thing?
Really good. Really good.
Yeah.
Became close friends with some of the people there, have helped us out that may not be part of the case, but have, you know, helped us out with, talking about how they approach things and what they do. And, as all law enforcement goes, you know, they work on facts too. They don't work on speculation.
Right.
And that's what they've taught me. One of the biggest lessons they've taught me is that you can't decide that you're, you know, this person did this or this person did that. You can't. It's just not, you know, you have to have some facts. And they've, you know, all our eggs are in their basket right now. Mm-hmm. And they're not a fast moving machine, but they get the job done. And they're still working on it, and it's not going to become a cold case. It's still, they're still doing reviews, on a lot of the tasks that they've been assigned. And it's, with the latest search they did for us, about a month ago now in May, it's been, you know, really refreshing that they showed up and really put the boots in the to the ground and really search hard in those hard areas. And it's nice to see that. And everybody says, you know, did they get a tip? And we're like, no, they have done a SAR review, which is search and rescue. They've done a review of all those locations, and they just feel that, you know, people, when they go missing, there's no rules to which direction they go.
Right.
So, they could go up a hill that's at a huge slope, and you think that, oh, they didn't go there. Well, possibly they did. So let's check that off our box, right?
Exactly.
And check everything that we can possibly find in those areas. And then we can take that right out of the equation.
Yeah. And it's good to go back even to the same areas. You know, I spoke with a guy who does search and rescue for different cases. And he said that it's amazing to him how many times people will go back to the same area and, you know, somebody will be found, you know, mm-hmm. a long time later, and people will come back and say, well, we've searched that area 10 times. We've had, yes. you know, we've had teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's just, it's important to realize that, like, you know, mm-hmm. we're only human. Our eyes can only do so much, and sometimes it's just yes. not there to see, and then a little bit later it is. So it's a tough one, but I'm super glad that they, after some time, you know, came back and they're saying, we're not done here. We are absolutely still, you know, active in this case.
Yes, and we're lucky. The members that we've been dealing with have been fabulous to our family, and any questions we have, they've always reported back to us quick, and give us quick updates, and which is very nice.
Yeah,
and it's been really good over the last probably 2 years, and try to meet with them as much as we can. And I don't necessarily like to talk in, you know, over phones or texting or emails. I like to be in person, and then you can really, you know, gauge the direction that everything's going in.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, that's good. I'm really glad to hear that you guys are on such good terms and you feel like they've been a good support to you guys. That's great.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, you know, I kind of spoke with Jordan just briefly on what she tends to believe, you know, as far as, do you think that Ryan just wandered off and it's just a matter of that we haven't found him and that he's on that hill? And she said, yes. And it sounds like that's similar to what you and Heather feel as well, then, is that there's no reason to believe he's not on that hill. And it's just a matter of looking in the right spot.
Yeah, it's very vast. It's very, very vast wilderness, and we've searched a big area of it, but we could have missed a couple of spots on the side of the hill or in different valleys, and we're just going to continue on with what we can do.
Yeah,
which is that part of it.
How big of an area, just roughly? I mean, we use miles. I know you guys are in kilometers, but how big
an area? I use both. Yeah. So you're probably look, how big is Sun Peaks?
Yeah, like the area that you guys that you're concentrating on, I guess I should say.
The area that we're concentrating on right now is probably a 1 mile by 1 mile area.
Okay.
And they got a basically have mountains on both sides of it. So it's very, very compact area. And you can go up the mountain and, you know, take up different areas up the mountain. And then, you know, that one area is where we've been concentrating on.
Okay. So 1 by 1. So that's a little bit smaller of an area.
And then the town. Yeah. And then the town is probably, you know, to get to the one end of town is probably 5 miles.
Okay.
Kind of thing.
Okay.
And then, you know, spread out throughout the valley of that area, right?
Okay.
So it's not a huge, huge town, but it's your mid to large size ski resort.
Okay.
That you would find in the United States and Canada.
Right. Yeah. I'm very interested to see, once I get up there, just, you know, get a lay of the land. It's so difficult to picture mm-hmm. it and really immerse yourself when you haven't seen it. You know, you can look at a map and you can look at the pictures, but there's just something about being there in person that's, mm-hmm. you know, fill in those gaps. So I absolutely plan on doing that when I'm not so pregnant.
Yeah. So It'll be a little bit,
but yeah, I'm not in a position to be hiking at this very moment, yes. But I will get there for sure. And, good. You know, I absolutely want to continue, you know, staying in contact with you guys and, yes. You know, who knows, maybe we can meet up once we get there and see if I can plan it around a time that you guys are going to be there as well.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
Yeah. And again, I just want to say that we as a family appreciate all the, you know, the media attention with your podcast and others, and appreciate that you guys can take the time to do this, because it brings the awareness to Ryan's case. And again, if somebody does know anything, or not even knows anything about that night, or thinks that it doesn't mean anything but can remember something, we certainly always encourage them to come forward, because, you know, that could be the missing link.
Absolutely.
To something.
Oh yeah, that is so true. And everybody, you know, I've heard so many different people say, oh well, you know, I already heard what so-and-so said. I know the same things that they know. But it's, right. It's just, you know, everybody has a different account. I've talked about it before, is, you know, we can all right. be looking at the same photo and give a little bit of a different insight. So absolutely. I encourage people, even if you feel like you don't know anything, but maybe you were just up there and you saw, I don't know if it's anything, but here's this little tidbit I have, absolutely reach out mm-hmm. and, we can just add it to the list, you know, even if it doesn't go anywhere. It's good to know.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, and the other thing I want to say is that, you know, Ryan's missed by many people, and I'm one of them. He's a really good kid.
Absolutely. And I, you know, just learning about him through other people, it's such a bizarre way to get to know somebody, but there's just something so captivating about him to me. People are just mm-hmm. so connected to him, and just looking at his picture and you know, I've seen a couple of videos, he's definitely captured me as well.
Everybody says that that could be my kid, right? So
absolutely, he's just that, you know, genuine. I mean, here we'd call him like the all-American boy, but I guess he's the all-Canadian boy.
Yes, a Canadian boy. Yeah,
that's right.
Unfortunately, my time doing this podcast has shown me that bad things happen to good people. The Shtukas are good people, and they're good parents. That's something that's clear to me from just one conversation with each of them. The reason they haven't found their son is not from lack of effort on their end, that's for sure. I can't think of anything else they could possibly do to try and bring their son home than the things we've heard about. What they need is more information. One thing that's tricky about Ryan's case is nobody ever saw him actually leave that house party. So it seems to me that that's where we need more information to come from, the people who attended the party. So like Scott and I said, even if you were at the Sunday Funday house that night, but you didn't see Ryan or had never met Ryan, You may still have information that you don't even know is important. It's come to my attention that several people wrote a list of all who were at the party. That's a list I'd love to see. I'd like to continue to cover Ryan's case, but I can really only do that if people agree to talk to me. So I'm asking anyone who was at Sun Peaks in February of 2017 to please reach out to me. Together, we can all do our part to help bring Ryan home.
We've been asked how our listeners can contribute to the show, so we set up an account with Patreon. Check out the link in our show notes if you're interested in supporting our cause. You can also find it on our website, nowheretobefoundpodcast.com.